What I want to do this morning is just have a bit of an overview at several different types of preaching. You may have heard people refer to different kinds of preaching, so I thought I'd pick some of those names. But of course, people will always tell you that they want biblical preaching, and usually criticize you for not giving them biblical preaching. So I can assure you that all of these types of preaching are biblical preaching. They're ways of dealing with the text. Although people who call for biblical preaching probably wouldn't agree. Okay, so we'll look at some of these. I like that image that I've selected up there of St. Francis. He's not feeding the birds, he's preaching to the birds. So very famously, St. Francis used to preach the gospel to animals. And I don't know what I think about that.
Was he practicing his sermon?
No, he wasn't practicing his sermon. He was sharing the good news with the birds. So that could be a good thing. You might, in terms of finding modes of communication, you might involve some breadcrumbs that will hold the attention or something like that. However, St. Francis preaching to the birds. Okay, so the first kind of preaching I want to talk about with you is expository preaching. And there are great arguments about what does and what doesn't count as expository preaching. But basically what it means is that it's a form of preaching which quite deliberately and intentionally opens up a Bible passage for a congregation. Now, there are three main ways of doing expository preaching. excuse me. That's my colleague Vicky Balabansky up there preaching at the School of Discipleship a couple of years ago in Sydney. And she's a very fine expository preacher herself. She's a New Testament scholar, so you'd expect her to pay close attention to the text, but which she does. So the first kind of expository preaching is verse-by-verse preaching, which basically means you have a passage and you work through verse-by-verse that passage, drawing attention to key words or concepts or ideas that are repeated in different verses, or the way the theme of the passage as a whole is built up out of the different verses. So you would have probably heard that. It usually involves the preacher holding the Bible in the left hand or the right hand and referring constantly to it and reading a verse and then talking about it for a little while and then reading the next verse and then talking about it for a while. Much as I do with the basis of union when I think about it. So that's verse by verse expository preaching. And people really like it. When I was the president, I got to preach all around the country and in some of our partner churches overseas as well. And I developed a habit, really out of necessity, because I had to be able to provide sermons quickly and at fairly short notice. And I developed the habit of using a technique, I've forgotten what it's called, but you ask yourself three questions about a text. So you choose your text and then you ask three questions. And the three questions are: what's behind the text, what's in the text, and what's in front of the text. So what's behind the text is the background to that book of the Bible or that particular passage or something like that. And that's something that you learn by study over the years or by just experience, by reading commentaries and books about the Bible. You learn the background to the different books. And so I could talk about that. And then the second, so that's what's behind the text. Then what's in the text? Then I'd work through the text verse by verse and just draw attention to the key bits. And then the question, what's in front of the text? Well, that's us. We're in front of the text looking at it. And so I try to make connections then between the message in the text and what we were experiencing in our lives together. And it's a very simple way of preaching and producing sermons quickly. What's behind the text? What's in the text? What's in front of the text? And I was just really surprised at how much people liked to hear the Bible opened up like that. So it reminded me that this expository preaching, and especially verse by verse preaching, has a particular place in helping people to encounter the Word of God. So verse by verse preaching is the first kind of expository preaching. The second kind is thematic preaching, and there you might take a particular theme from the Bible. Maybe it's, you know, grace or faith or hope, you know, some sort of theme, and then you would bring to it biblical passages that speak about it. Maybe 10 to 12 different biblical passages, each throwing a different bit of light on the theme, say hope. So you might want to involve Abraham and Sarah and their hope for this impossible hope of a child in their old age. Or you might bring one of the passages hoping for the coming of the Messiah and talk about hope in that sense. Or you might use that verse from Hebrews that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, in its context, of course. But the idea is that you'd take a theme, a biblical theme, and then throw different lights on it by choosing different passages of the Bible that pick up different aspects of that theme. And that's thematic expository preaching. Okay, and the third kind of expository preaching, which is very popular, is narrative preaching. That's where you basically tell a Bible story using the words of the Bible and maybe unpacking them a bit more. So the parables of Jesus lend themselves to quite dramatic retellings of like the prodigal son or the feeding of the sower and the seed, or any of those kind of things, where you basically retell the story, remembering that the Bible itself has its own rhythms and its own power to tell its own stories. So all you're doing is helping the words of the Bible do what they are set up to do already. I had an experience recently where I was conducting a wedding, and for a variety of reasons, it wasn't appropriate to have a sermon. I usually preach at weddings, but they didn't want a sermon, but they did want a Bible reading, and we chose the Bible reading. And I took a narrative approach to the Bible reading, really. I didn't add any words of my own. I just read it quite slowly. And I'd done what you'd done before. I'd spent a lot of time reading it slowly to myself and reflecting on it and having it become part of me. And so when it came time, and this wedding was in someone's house, so people were just kind of gathered around, all I did was read them the Bible passage with some, not dramatically, not, I wasn't making a show of it, but just reading it out of my heart, so to speak, and slowly so people could hear it. And it was quite extraordinary. It was quite extraordinary. The number of people who wanted to talk to me afterwards about what they had heard in that Bible passage just reminded me that the Bible is able to speak for itself if we clear ourselves out of the way and just let the words surface. So that's a third kind of expository preaching, which is narrative preaching. Okay, the next kind of preaching I want to mention is topical preaching, and that's I think in some ways one of the hardest kinds of preaching to do. And what I have in mind are preaching on occasions like Mother's Day or Anzac Day or at a wedding. That's what I mean by a topical preaching, where something is happening, everyone knows it, it's probably, you know, it's on TV, it's not an elephant in the room. It's just this great big thing that's happening, and you've got to preach. And so preachers will take a couple of different approaches to that. One approach is to just stare it in the eye and preach on that thing, or let that theme guide you, and let it guide you to relevant biblical passages or a biblical story or something like that that enables you to bring the words of the Bible into this big conversation about marriage or war or, you know, whatever it is. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is just to ignore it altogether and treat it as a big distraction from what you're really there for to do, which is to hear the word of God and to sit quietly and allow God to speak to you and just ignore that big distraction that's going on. That's another way to go. Or there's somewhere in between where you can preach your sermon on whatever the lectionary has offered up to you and use the big occasion to provide illustrations for your service. So your focus is again on the biblical readings for the day, but you let the context give you your illustrations and you use the context to make connections between the Bible and the setting. So these can be quite challenging moments to preach, but they can also be pretty rich, where you once you find a way through. I find the wedding sermons are tricky ones, probably because most of the weddings I conduct, and I really only conduct usually one a year, sometimes two, and they're virtually always for family or friends or something like that, because I don't have a congregation that I pastor. And that's great. I love that kind of ministry. It makes me kind of the chaplain to the network that I'm part of, and people seem to appreciate that. But it creates a bit of a problem in that at a wedding, for example, when the congregation is gathered, I know at least half of them, and I know the stories of their lives and their relationships and their divorces and all that kind of stuff. And it makes it really important not to romanticize or to skim over stuff that they all know and I know. So finding a real thing to say in a setting like that can be a challenge, but once you get it right once, that then suggests how to do it in other situations. There's a little book of mine called Backyard Theology that's got one of my wedding sermons in it. I think that chapter is called A University of Love or something, where I try to honour the wisdom and the experience out of all the ups and downs of love that were in the congregation that I was preaching to. Topical preaching can be challenging. One of the things that can happen with topical preaching, and the illustration I've chosen is of a military chaplain preaching. He's clearly preaching, but he's clearly identifying with the military too, because he's got all his medals on. And let me say, I'm a great supporter of our chaplains to the military. They do fantastic ministry with largely young adults who are in very stressful situations, and it's they're unsung heroes to me of the mission of the church. But there is this issue of, say on Anzac Day, how do you preach a sermon that respects the important things that are being remembered, but doesn't allow the church to be recruited into the jingoism, the nationalism that's attached to it, but allows the church to be God's people and not, first of all, the nation's people? It's just a challenge that you have to be conscious of and work with. Right, let's have another kind of preaching. Dialogue sermons. Pictures don't show terribly well, but that's okay. You've got two men, one in a clerical collar and one in a business suit, clearly talking to each other. The man in the clerical collar looks a bit defensive, but there's a dialogue going on here. And this was a very popular form of sermon in the 70s, where it would be kind of artificially staged, and into the 80s, where the preacher would have a theme and would have a dialogue partner. So the preacher would say some things about the biblical text, and the other person would then come in with questions or a different point of view, and it was meant to stimulate in the congregation that sense of don't just accept what the preacher says, but engage with the text and what he's saying, and think your own thoughts in relation to the Bible, which is a good thing to share. I've seen other kinds of dialogue sermons where, I fairly regularly attend an early morning service in Adelaide, which is very small, just a handful of people, usually the minister and probably four or five, sometimes six other people, and it's early in the week, it's on a Tuesday morning. When I first was going to this service, it was a little bigger, and the preacher always prepared a sermon on the coming Sunday's readings. It would be like a draft sermon, so it got them going early. That was all fine. And then we had a minister who thought, this is ridiculous to be trying to prepare the sermon on Tuesday that I'm really thinking of for Sunday. And so he turned it into a kind of a Bible study where we all read the readings, and he would have prepared some stuff just as conversation starters, and then we'd talk together about the readings, and that's become a really significant conversation for the ministers there and for those of us who participate in it. It's a great way to begin your week and to begin your journey with the lectionary readings. But effectively, it's a kind of dialogue sermon. It's definitely in the sermon place in our act of worship, but it's where we work together on the text. Of course, it works because it's a very small group of people. But then a lot of our congregations are these days very small groups of people. There's opportunities with dialogue sermons to respect the wisdom and experience in small groups. There are some other kinds of dialogue sermons. So one that I've only seen occasionally, and is it a sermon? It kind of is. It requires a very careful handling of relationships, but it's an interfaith dialogue. Because our relationships with people of other faiths is very important. Not to compromise our Christian identity by any means, but just in the world that we live in, it's important that we don't pigeonhole people of other faiths or accept being pigeonholed ourselves. Now, we happen to share the scriptures or large portions with the scriptures with two other faiths, so the Jewish people and Muslims. We have a whole lot of stuff that we share. It can be engaging to sit with a Muslim and talk about Jesus, for example. Jesus gets a lot of references in the Quran, and he has a very particular place in Muslim theology and faith, and is highly respected. But to have that conversation, that awkward conversation between a committed Christian and a committed Muslim, about Jesus or about Mary, she gets more she's referred to constantly through the Quran, or the Trinity. There's another interesting conversation to have. I don't know if you ever had faith conversations with Muslims, but they all want to talk about the Trinity. That's the kind of thing you'd have to ensure that it was a safe conversation, so there would be it wouldn't be causing offence in the congregation. So it might be more of a small group experience. But dialogues that go outside of the community can be very rich. Just as an aside, if you want to get into the interfaith dialogue game, the easiest way to do it is to take a taxi ride in. Probably not in Darwin because none of the rides are quite long enough, but definitely in Brisbane or Sydney or Melbourne. It's now more likely than not that the driver will be a person who practices a religion, and more likely than not it won't be the Christian religion. So a lot of Hindu drivers, a lot of Muslim drivers, I've had Jewish drivers and Sikh drivers, and they're very committed to their faith, And if you disclose that you're a person of faith, they'll talk with you about religion the way old-fashioned taxi drivers like my grandfather would talk with you about the racing. You know, they just really want to talk about it. It can be surprising how it helps you clarify your own faith when you've got to express it, share it with someone who hasn't got any of your language or religious language or assumptions. But it builds you up in your own faith, and it is an opportunity to practice sharing your faith with somebody else who's interested. That's a bit of an aside. Another more recent approach to dialogue sermons is the Q&A style. You know, we've got that appalling television program on Monday nights. I always switch to something else. I can't quite see the point of getting a bunch of highly qualified, interesting people together on a panel and then ask them stuff that they know nothing about. You know, I don't get that. Anyway, it doesn't entertain me, but it's become a part of our culture in Australia now, that mode of things. It's embedded now in Australian culture, so it's a form of information, idea sharing that we're really used to in Australia now, and it can dialogue sermons can take that form, where you get a group of people who've prepared, that's one of the key things, who've prepared and have thought deeply and lived deeply with the text that you're trying to unpack. And then you've got to stimulate it first with some pre-prepared questions to get things going. But then quite a good dialogue can develop between your panel and the rest of the people who are gathered together. Narrative preaching. Now, narrative preaching cropped up under expository preaching, where you basically take a Bible story and find a way to share the Bible's own story in its own words. Narrative preaching is a little bit different. It's a kind of movement that developed particularly in the 1980s and 90s and became the main way that Western preachers in churches like ours preached. So the background to narrative preaching is that it was based on the idea that stories and metaphors and symbols communicate truth. They don't just illustrate truth. So you may never have noticed before, but did you see in the Gospels, people only ever remember Jesus' illustrations? The parables, you know, the disciples have to get him aside later to figure out what's going on. But Jesus' own model of preaching is to tell stories that have lots of space for questions, for thinking outside of your set of assumptions and the rest of it. But in a really strange way, are actually very clear what they're about. You know, they speak in it with a confronting directness, but they're stories, made up stories at that. They're stories that people recognize because they use the bits and pieces of people's everyday experience, but they're just stories. They're not arguments where you have a hypothesis and then you prove it by various logical steps. They're kind of the opposite of that. And in the 80s, 90s, especially, this developed into a whole theory around preaching where the aim was not to nail down your theme or nail down the meaning of the text, but to open it up with the use of imaginative language and as I said, symbols and stories and the rest of it. It's the way I would guess a lot of people in this room preach intuitively like that. So I was saying to Felicity yesterday, one of my favourite definitions of preaching that I worked with for a very long time was from an English Methodist preacher who said, preaching is like taking people for a very long walk and then leaving them to find their own way home. So that's kind of a definition of narrative preaching, where you don't require people to get and agree with a a logical series of thoughts that you have. What you, all you're trying to do is to enable the Spirit to make the Word speak into the lives of people, and for people to connect their lives with the Word. Narrative preaching honours the, is it the right side of the brain rather than left? The one that's not about maths, the one that's about cooking and poetry, yeah. That's right, sir. Thank you. Okay. Now, in that mode, I've included this as a style of preaching, even though its practitioners may give me pushback on it. But some of you may have experienced godly play. Godly play is really a way of telling the Bible stories from creation through to Revelation. So it's quite structured. There's a series of these stories, and a godly play room generally has shelves like that, sometimes wrapped around, and the objects that you use to tell the story are kept very carefully in their baskets, so that when you want to tell a particular story, you go straight to the basket that's got the little figures and whatever you're going to put it on. That might be a mat, or it could be a mat covered with sand, or whatever it is, whatever story you're telling, you have pieces that illustrate it. And then there's a way of telling the story very slowly, moving the pieces around. And then when you get to the end of the story, you sit for a little while, and then you say, I wonder if the story would be different if, or you invite people to wonder something themselves. I wonder if Sarah hadn't had the baby, what would have happened? Or you say, I wonder if there's some part of this story that you could take out and still have the story, and then you'll have a conversation about that. It began as a form of introducing quite small children to the biblical stories, and it's still very successful with that. But it works surprisingly well with adults too, if they're willing to do it. So where I am in South Australia, it's being used in our adult fellowships in UCAF, which in South Australia at least tend to be very old people. And they really warm to it. I guess in that context, but taking a step further, it's been used very successfully in nursing homes, particularly with people whose memories aren't quite so good. But this way of telling the story enables people to access parts of their memory and life that they couldn't otherwise. There was a workshop on it up in Port Augusta, and the Congress people were really excited about it. They loved this way of telling Bible stories. But really what it is, it's a technique that's designed to open up the scriptures for people, and then let God deal with people in the way that God's dealing with people. It doesn't impose a particular interpretation, or it purports not to. If you get the chance to experience godly play, I would recommend it. It's very interesting and it's very restful, actually. Not all preaching is restful. Okay, here's another. This bald man is at the Edinburgh Festival. He's wearing a kilt. You can't see it. There's probably just as well. But biblical storytelling. Felicity and I were speaking about it yesterday. It's a way of delivering the stories in the Bible in the Bible's own words, with more intent than you get when you just read a text out. So it can be done just by reading. So I gave that example of the wedding where, because I couldn't preach as such, I read the Bible story in a particular way. not a dramatic way, but just a way that, that tried to draw the depths and the rhythms of the story out for people. So biblical storytelling can be a particularly mindful way of reading the Bible out loud for people, or it can involve memorizing a passage and then sharing it with the congregation with lots of eye contact. My own practice is not to dramatize, I guess because I'm an introvert and all that stuff makes me a bit creepy, but I'm aware of other biblical storytellers who memorize and then partially act out. They take on the characters and partially act them out. I've seen a great big slab of Romans told. So it's not even just stories. It can be other books of the Bible. In this case, one of Paul's letters. And the way the storyteller told it, she'd created this other narrative about, now who's the person who carried the letter? Sorry? No, it was a woman. Was it Phoebe or? I've forgotten. And that's terrible. I'll have to look it up later in the Bible, because she gets referred to. And so what this storyteller did was she, first of all, establishes herself as this character and has a bit of a conversation about what it was like to work with Paul on this letter. That might interest you, that it's very clear in Romans that he was being assisted by a woman who was then going to take the letter. And she reflected on the arguments that they had and the conversations that they had, because, of course, when she took the letter, she'd be reading it to people and it would be interactive. They would have questions and comments and feedback and all the rest of it. So she was really the person who was to represent Paul's message to them. So she created this character, and then she went into about three chapters of Romans. It was remarkable. But the thing just came to life. It was extraordinary. And all these other layers of Paul's theology emerged in this storytelling event. Now that storyteller is very experienced and gifted, but you can do similar things in much more low-key ways, just in your own preparation. As I said, developing a bit of a habit of memorizing texts is a good thing. It's good on lots of levels. It gives you access to the Bible when you don't have a Bible. It's the kind of thing that improves with practice. So you kind of rewire your brain to remember Bible passages, and that can be a very helpful thing to do. And you may not be getting older, but I certainly am, and getting all kinds of advice on things I should be doing to use it rather than lose it. So it can be a good thing for people of riper years like me. Okay, now, so I've offered you several forms of biblical story, of preaching. I'm trying to remember what they are now. I'll go back. Okay, so we looked at expository preaching and topical preaching, dialogue sermons, narrative preaching, godly play, and biblical storytelling. Whatever style you use of preaching, whatever tool you use, underneath, the best preaching is ethical. That's not moralizing. It's the preacher recognizing the position of privilege and power that they have in a community, and having at a very deep intuitive level an awareness of how to use that power and how not to use that power, what your responsibilities are as a preacher, which is what Helen and Felicity are going to go on with later.